Sports, weather, entertainment, and much more. This is News on the Edge.
Good evening and welcome to the Edge News for Tuesday, April 30th, 2024, which is also SUNY New Paltz's FM sign-off. I'm Patrick Kelly, coming to you live from the SUNY New Paltz campus. We're having a special segment today, interviewing Professor John Wigg. Before we get to that exciting interview, here are today's headlines. Topping tonight's national news. The Environmental Protection Agency said Tuesday it has finalized a ban on consumer uses of methylene chloride, a chemical that is widely used as a paint stripper, but is known to cause liver cancer and other health problems. The EPA said its actions will protect Americans from health risks, while allowing certain commercial uses to continue, with robust worker protections. The rule banning methylene chloride is the second risk management rule to be finalized by President Joe Biden's administration under landmark 2016 amendments to the Toxic Substance Control Act. This was first enacted last month to ban asbestos, a carcinogen that kills tens of thousands of Americans every year, but is still used in some chlorine bleach, brake pads, and other products. Quote, exposure to methylene chloride has devastated families across this country for far too long, including some who saw loved ones go to work and never come home, unquote, EPA Administrator Michael Reagan said in a statement. The new rule, he said, quote, brings an end to unsafe methylene chloride practices and implements the strongest worker protections possible for the few remaining industrial uses, ensuring no one in this country is put in harm's way by this dangerous chemical, unquote. In other news, House Democrats said on Tuesday that they would join with the GOP to kill an effort to oust Speaker Mike Johnson if House Republicans forced to vote to remove him from his post after he allowed a foreign aid package, including assistance to Ukraine, to be approved. In a joint statement after a closed-door party meeting, the three top Democrats said that they would side with Republicans supportive of Mr. Johnson and vote to table any motion to vacate him from the Speaker's chair, blocking it from coming up. Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia, has filed such a measure and threatened to call a snap vote on it, a threat she renewed on Tuesday after Democrats made clear their intention. Quote, at this moment, upon completion of our national security work, the time has come to turn the page on this chapter of pro-Putin Republican obstruction, unquote, the Democratic leader said in a joint statement. Quote, if she invokes the motion, it will not succeed, unquote. The statement was made by Representative Hakeem Jeffries of New York, the Democratic leader, Republican Catherine M. Clark of Massachusetts, the number two Democrat, and Representative Pete Aguilar of California, the chairman of the Democratic caucus. In state news, a group of Palestinian students at Columbia University have filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights, alleging university officials for months have discriminated against Palestinian, Muslim, and Arab students. Palestinian Legal, a national advocacy group, filed a complaint on Thursday following the arrest of more than 100 protesters at the Gaza Solidarity encampment on the Columbia campus on April 18th. The complaint alleges school administrators failed to address racist harassment of students and unfairly disciplined pro-Palestinian protesters in violation of Title VI of the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which prohibits racial discrimination by recipient of federal funding. If federal investigators find that the university violated the law, administrators could be tasked with resolving the concerns or risk federal funding. The claim is that is the latest in a series of complaints filed by Palestinian and Jewish students over alleged mistreatment by university officials since Hamas's October 7th attack on Israel and the country's ensuing siege on Gaza. Jewish students sued Columbia in February over claims the administrators allowed, quote, rampant anti-Semitism, unquote, to persist on campus, also invoking Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. Spokespeople for both Columbia University and the United States Department of Education declined to respond to requests for comment. The Office for Civil Rights has received 341 Title VI complaints of alleged discrimination against people of shared ancestry, including actual or perceived ethnic characteristics, since the start of the fiscal year in October, up from 63 in the year prior, according to a department spokesperson. The four students, Palestinians Mariam Alwan, Leila Saliba, Jean Halim, and Daria Matescu, president of Columbia Law Students for Palestine, have been, quote, the target of extreme, unquote, racist and Islamophobic harassment on campus, the complaint says. In local news, a Highland man was charged with felony assault of a child under the age of 7, according to the state police blogger. Emilio N. Hines, 30, was arrested by state police at Highland at 7:56 p.m. Monday, April 29th, and charged with felony assault by an adult of someone under the age of 7, and with a misdemeanor of acting in a manner injurious to a child less than 17. According to New York state law, a person is guilty of felony assault of a child if, quote, being 18 years old or more and with the intent to cause physical injury to a person less than 7 years old, the defendant causes such injury to such person, unquote. Hines was sent to Ulster County Jail in lieu of $50,000 bail. Felony assault of a child is a Class D felony, punishable by 2 to 7 years in state prison for convicted first-time offenders. Additional information was not immediately available. In other news, since at least last summer, neighbors of a pair of properties on Prospect Street in Newport have come before the Village of Newport's planning board to express their misgivings about proposed work they say at a minimum would change the character of their neighborhood. Prospect Estate LLC, Principal Bassam Hisarad, is proposing significant work on adjoining properties at 5 and 7 Prospect Street. The former will include the demolition of a single-family home to be replaced by a two-family dwelling. The latter would see an addition built onto an existing single-family home for conversion into a two-family home. But some neighbors suggest that plans for both properties are exploiting a zoning loophole for an area that sits at the line of the B2, core business, and R2, residential, districts, with the former allowing for 3 bedrooms of unrelated occupants in each single-family dwelling to rent individual rooms to students attending SUNY Newport. And finally, world news. An Iranian billionaire convicted of stealing nearly $3 billion had his death sentence commuted to a 20-year jail term. Babak Zanjani was convicted in 2016 of pocketing money from the oil ministry to circumvent U.S. sanctions of Iran. He said he had been unable to hand over the cash because of sanctions on him. The news comes after Iran's judiciary said Mr. Zanjani had agreed to work with authorities and his overseas assets had been transferred to Iran. The announcement was made by a spokesperson for Iran's judiciary, Ashgar Jahangir, on Tuesday, according to the judiciary-run Mizan News Agency. In other news, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said Israel will launch an invasion of southern Gaza city of Rafah, regardless of troops talks with Hamas. It comes amid ongoing attempts to try to reach an agreement for a ceasefire and hostage releases. But at a meeting of hostage relatives, Mr. Netanyahu said he would invade, quote, with or without, unquote, a deal. His comments followed renewed warnings by the U.S. against a Rafah invasion unless civilians were properly protected. In a phone call with Mr. Netanyahu on Sunday, U.S. President Joe Biden, quote, reiterated his clear position, unquote, on Rafah, a White House statement said. Mr. Biden had previously described the invasion of Rafah as a, quote, red line, unquote. More than half of Gaza's 2.5 million population is in Rafah, having fled there to escape fighting other parts of the territory. Conditions in the overcrowded city are dire, and displaced people there have spoken of a lack of food, water, and medication. The West Bank-based Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas said on Monday that an invasion of Rafah would be the, quote, biggest catastrophe in the Palestinian people's history, unquote. Israeli sources told the Reuters news agency on Monday that plans to attack Rafah would be shelved in favor of a, quote, sustained period of calm, unquote, if a ceasefire agreement between Hamas and Israel were reached. That's it for news tonight. We'll be back with Professor John Wigg from the Newport Theater Department. Your Edge News time is 7:09 p.m.
I'm my pain into purpose is pretty much what I have done to start this foundation.
In August 2020, after the death of George Floyd, Bridget Floyd and other family members established the George Floyd Memorial Foundation in support of the Black community.
It's going to take more than just us as a foundation. It's going to take the community, the world, to make a change.
Fight for racial justice for the Black community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Edge News for Tuesday, April 30th. It was Dan Rather who once said, quote, "The dream begins with a teacher who believes in you, who tugs and pushes and leads you to the next plateau, sometimes poking you with a sharp stick called truth." Unquote. I can think of no better words than Mr. Rather's to introduce our next guest, longtime theater professor here at SUNY New Paltz, who is retiring this year, Professor John Wigg. Professor Wigg, thank you for joining us.
And thanks for having me, and you can call me Jack.
Alrighty.
That's a strange Irish thing, but just call me Jack.
Yeah. How do you get your start in theater?
It's always been there. I guess it goes back to the Christmas pageants when I was a little kid in church. Interestingly enough, I was in all my school plays in high school. I was also in the band, and I loved to paint and draw. And I also really liked to write at an early age. So I think all those things were there as I went into college, and I ended up majoring at that point in English and creative writing. My writing had been nurtured in high school, and I was a strong writer at that point. And so I got a degree, a BA in English and creative writing. There was no theater program at our college, but we had a theater group. And we had a great professor. His name was Charles B. Smith, Dr. Charles B. Smith, known to me as Charlie, an Irish professor who I spent a lot of time in Ireland with later on, who kind of changed my view of understanding that you can make a living in theater. But I still didn't quite believe it. So I got my degree in English. I ended up doing a little substitute teaching in English. And then I decided I'm going to write the great American novel, so I'm just going to take a conventional job. And I sold audio equipment at an old firm called Sam Goody's, which was really big in the New York and Philly area at that point, and I was laid off. And I decided, okay, I'm going to collect unemployment and write. And at the end of 10 weeks of unemployment, the designer and artistic director of the Hedgerow Theater, the country's longest-running repertory theater, approached me in the street and said, "Do you know anybody that's been unemployed for 10 weeks?" And I said, "I have." And she said, "Would you like a job as my production assistant?" And I said, "Sure." She said, "Well, get your butt down to CETA, or down to the unemployment agency, and apply for a CETA grant. This is interesting, and you folks should really have this too. There was a president called Jimmy Carter that gave us grants to go to work and begin our careers in the arts, in nonprofit corporations and organizations. So I was given a two-year grant where I got $150 a week in the late 1970s, which was really great, and I went to the Hedgerow Theater for 5 years, where I ended up living and working in a communal theater, doing repertory theater, and studying acting, but also serving as a technical director and a scenic and lighting designer for 5 years, where I designed 30 shows and also performed in quite a few as well. So that's what really launched me. And I talk about that because you never know what's going to come your way. I think you have to really have positive thinking. You have to envision what you want. But I think if you do it all through my life, it's proven to be true. If you believe in what you're going to do, things are going to come to you. And that's exactly what happened to me. And also, then once I had that opportunity, I stayed. And I really took advantage to learn how to act with some of the greatest teachers, to learn how to design. And that got me into graduate school solely on my portfolio. I decided to go to Wayne State in Detroit, the Hillbury Repertory Theater, which was the only repertory theater where you do different shows every day. And from there, the rest is history. I've had a really great career, and I found out that, yes, you can do this for a living, and it can be a very comfortable. And in the end, I'll tell you what, I'm a really happy guy. I'm 70 years old, and I've done exactly what I wanted all my life.
Hmm. Now, you are a scenographer, which is a really under-publicized area in the theater for home. For listeners at home, what exactly is scenography?
Scenography is really a European approach to design. That's why we don't hear a lot about it here in America. If you go to the theater in most countries in Europe, you'll see that there is a designer that creates the entire picture. There are still lighting people and costume people under them. But scenography is a study of lighting, scenery, costumes, sound, everything that comes together to create what Wagner called the Gesamtkunstwerk, which is the total art of the theater. Wayne State was the only place that was doing that. And so I chose that for my career. And then for around 20 years before I even came to New Paltz, I did some scenography. I'll tell you what, doing all three of those visual elements at once, it's a killer. But up until I came here, I did around 200 different productions where I did scenery and lighting. I always did them together. So again, it's that whole idea of one person being in charge. And what you find when you go to Europe and you see that, you see this strangely more unified production even than the big productions we have here, because it becomes one vision. And I was very fortunate to study early on with the guy who really invented the term and considered the greatest scenographer of the late 20th century, Joseph Swoboda. And I'll talk about that later when we talk about key events in my life.
I think you've cued us into the next question quite well. You've worked with some of these amazing people, these amazing productions. What have some of them, like, the key people that stick out when you look back on the career? Obviously, Swoboda is one of them.
Well, Professor Swoboda, that launched me into really examining imagery and projection in very rudimentary ways, because it wasn't possible back there to do it affordably. So I spent a lot of time, because of him and his motivation, finding ways to project even when it was nearly impossible. And working with him was working with the great master. And also at that point, everything was in 35mm film. It took five projectors to create the entire image, the cinerama image on the stage. And all that was linked to the sound, and the actors had to interact with the video. And so I would say that is the most phenomenal experience. I've worked with a lot of great actors through, I've been the essentially the resident lighting designer at Shadowland, our regional theater, and I've worked with Paul Apprentice, Richard Benjamin, actors that aren't with us anymore, including young actors like Sean Astin. We work with Tom Hanks. You know, it's hard to pin down one, but I find that all of the actors and designers that have reached a pinnacle, I find that there's something special about them. I've always found them to be incredibly decent and ethical human beings.
Alrighty. We are going to take a quick PSA break. When we come back, more with Professor Jack Wade.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I know more about cooking dinner for a party of 12 than about packing a lunch for a 12-year-old. I know kids like things like fish sticks. Filets, I get, but sticks? Maybe we can just compromise on mac and cheese. Can you make that with Brie?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to put up with you. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUsKids, and the Ad Council.
Right now, our country feels divided, but there's a place where people are coming together.
I was nervous to talk to someone so different than me.
Me too.
Love Has No Labels and One Small Step are helping people with different political views, beliefs, and experiences connect through conversation, and it feels good.
This conversation gives me hope.
It gives me a lot of hope, too.
Take a step toward bringing our country and your community together. Start a conversation at lovehasnolabels.com/onesmallstep. A message from StoryCorps, Love Has No Labels, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to WFNP News. I'm here with Professor Jack Wade from the SUNY New Paltz Theater Department. Now, we've talked about your introduction to the world of theater and your work in there. How did you find your way to teaching?
I always wanted to be a teacher. I was in the Future Teachers of America in high school. I ended up having an education degree attached to my English degree. Teaching has always been very important to me. I was an Eagle Scout, and I was a camp counselor, and I spent 5 years teaching in that capacity when I was a young man, when I was going to college. So it's always been part of me, and I think that any strong theater practitioner is just a natural teacher, because you want to pass it on. We're always dealing with an apprenticeship, and it's the way I learned, too. So I think it was all in there for me. And once that I got that MFA and was able to go into college teaching, where I was really dealing with people that want to go on to a theater career, I'll tell you what, it's just been, I haven't looked back from the very beginning. And my greatest accomplishment in life are this mass of students down in New York that are all working at the highest level of the entertainment industry. And the fact that the greatest honor you can pay to a teacher, and they've all done this to me, is you can surpass your teacher. You know, I think a lot of teachers are like, oh, that really blows them away. But for me, that's the greatest thing, when my students are at a pinnacle higher than I ever reached, because it means that I guess I did something right.
Now, I've took two of your classes now, and one of the things I always keep whenever, especially from when I took intro theater with you, was theater and politics' relationship. What power do you think theater right holds right now in our current socio-political climate, everything being so unsure?
Oh, theater is always a driver. And I think right now it seems like the theater is a little fractured, and I think we need to come back and unify and get together again. But when we think about social change, I always point people back to Arthur Miller. He's the social conscience of the theater. And if anyone really addressed the McCarthy era, no one stronger, and no one put themselves on the line in a bigger way. Vaclav Havel used the theater in Czechoslovakia, eventually became the president. When we go to Ireland, the entire revolution originally came out of the theater. Theater is a driving force, and when it's working at its strongest, it can change the world. But when we're all at each other's throats within the art itself, I don't think we're changing the world as rapidly as we can. But I think we're starting to address all those things, and I think we're starting to address diversity in the theater. And I think, you know, we really do, as artists, have to come back and understand, you know, it's our job to make sure the world is aware when it's taking the wrong turn. Through all of our work, any of the arts, that's what we're all about in the end, is trying to make a world where, for God's sake, can people finally just have peace.
Now, what would you say, on the topic of education, what would you say to a student who has had a passion for the theater but is scared about pursuing it as a possible career option? It's often something that in a lot of high schools, a lot of career counselors will downplay theater as a career option. What would you say to a student?
High school teachers that do that are playing with somebody's dreams. And, you know, there's a lot of high school teachers that do that, but there's probably even more that ruin Shakespeare for students forever, okay? I don't get it. Early on, because I'm one of those kids that they wouldn't let me into the advanced art class when I was in seventh grade. And what I lost, you know, I guess I made it back. But, you know, this idea that we tell students that they can't succeed in the arts is just absolutely wrong on every level. And I hear this, I can't be in the theater because my parents won't let me. Well, are your parents going to live the rest of your life for you? And what I always tell my students is, I don't care what you do, if you're not doing something that makes you happy, you're going to be miserable by the time you're my age. You're not going to be still feeling like you're 19, okay? I still do, because I spent my whole life doing what I love to do. And in the theater especially, yes, there are a trillion actors, but there are only about 6 or 7 technicians. And the way that gets dismissed all the time, all of my alums are working at the highest level, lighting designers, technical directors, costume. We have actors from New Pulse, around 14 of them now, because of our type of education, because we teach them to survive. 14 of the wardrobe managers on Broadway today were acting majors here at New Pulse at one time. You've got to have a survival element there if you're going to be an actor. But in the rest of theater and TV, as far as the technical areas go, hey, guess what? They're just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So this myth that there's no future in the theater is just crap. And then also for actors, yes, there's a future, but you have to endure. Most actors don't make it until they're around 40. What you do for a living is you audition hundreds, thousands of times. You get rejected just like a writer does. And you have to have something to support yourself, but if you endure, you'll eventually find something. Because there are a lot of actors out there that aren't the greatest actors in the world that are making a very good living making commercials. Trust me. So, again, it's really about whatever you do in your life, make sure you follow your passion, because that's the only thing you have to drive you forward. And as someone who's done this now for really 50 years, I've never looked back, and it's been a great ride.
That's such a beautiful sentiment. Thank you so much for that. Do you have any last remarks that you want to share?
Well, for students, I know it's really difficult right now. You know, I ended up in my theater background, that 5 years at Hedgerow, was something that even people from my era really didn't experience that as much. That's something that happened more back in the Depression. The fact that, you know, I lived in an environment where we cooked for each other, everything was part of the artistic process. I think, especially for artistic students and people out there, you've got to find a way to make your life an art. In other words, if you're living your life through art, at every moment, you'll find a way to be happy. And I know it's really hard right now because the things that we're bombarded with, especially young people, but you will find redemption, hope, and you will find colleagues in the theater. I don't care where you come from, because as long as I've been in the theater has been the place where the LGBTQ community has always been safe. As a matter of fact, I am actually a minority there as a heterosexual person. So again, it's a place where we really are all the other, and we come together. We're the misfits that all come together, and we understand each other a great deal. So if you're thinking of, and also remember that there is graduate school opportunities galore for theater technicians for free, and we've put about 50 of them through in the last 25 years here. So there's just so many avenues of possibility for students. And I think students just, you need to get back out in the world. And the other thing, you need to network in person. In person. You need to not be afraid. You need to connect. Because we were all shy little people, like you at one point. And we had to learn how to get out of our shell and go out and connect. And that's really important, especially now, because too many people are in their screen.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. Thank you so much for those wise words. And that'll be it for us from the rest of the semester. Thank you so much for listening to The Edge News this semester. It means a lot to us students. On The Edge News staff, our directors Alyssa Roldan and Jack Flowers. Tonight's engineer has been...